Session. Carla, could you please read items 998 and 999 together?
Mm-hmm. 998, consider the proposal of Tim Sotuda, Southwest Hills, LLC, and the recommendation from the hearings officer for removal of conditions of approval imposed by prior comprehensive plan map and zoning map amendment ordinances for property at 2855 Southwest Patton Road, LU18112666CPZC, and item 999, amend the comprehensive plan map and zoning map amendment to remove conditions of approval imposed by prior ordinances for property at 2855 Southwest Patton Road at the request of Tim Sotuda, Southwest Hills, LLC, LU18-112666CPZC.
Very good. And Commissioner Udaly was absent from the hearing on August 6th, but it's my understanding, Commissioner, that you've reviewed the record and you intend to participate. Is that correct?
Yes, I have viewed almost 3 hours of the record, and it's very fresh in my memory. And I've also read the written testimony and findings, so I'm ready to go.
Very good. Does anybody have any ex parte contacts that they wish to declare?
Yes, I think we all received a letter from Jamie Strohecker.
I forwarded it without reading it.
Yeah. Okay, well, I read it.
Oh.
So I wanted to declare that.
Very good. My staff apparently fished it out. I do not recall having received that. Does anybody have any in the council chamber wish to ask Commissioner Saltzman about his declared ex parte contact?
I do. I'm fascinated to find out what's in it, but yeah. I'll wait until later.
We'll have to wait for the sequel. So there, other than Commissioner Saltzman, there have been no ex parte contacts.
So, Mayor, I'd like to disclose that ex parte contact. I received an email from Bill Failing offering his condolences on the passing of my mother-in-law. And I believe in the text beyond the condolence, he made some reference to progress in community conversations. I did not read that section of the email carefully, and it has no impact on my decision-making.
Does any member, anybody in the chamber have any question that they'd like to ask Commissioner Fish about his declared ex parte contact? Seeing none, very well. So, colleagues, we have heard testimony and we've received final submissions from both the applicant and the neighborhood. And we have a couple of options at this particular juncture. We could either immediately commence with council discussion. We could also reopen the record to hear briefly from the applicant in the neighborhood in terms of their various proposals and progress, or whatever else you would prefer.
Mayor, I'd like to hear from the applicant and the neighborhood about progress they may have made in their discussions.
Could I propose that we limit that progress to 5 minutes each?
No, that's fine.
Very good. Why don't we go ahead and do that? So we have, my understanding is we have a representative from the applicant, and we have the co-chairs, I believe, were designated to represent the neighborhood. Is that correct?
Mm.
Very good. Why don't we hear from, does it matter, legal counsel, which order we hear from? Should we hear from the applicant first?
Unless there's a preference, I don't think it matters.
Why don't we just go ahead and hear from the applicant first, unless there's some reason why you'd like to reverse the order. And is 5 minutes sufficient to be able to just summarize?
I think so.
Sure.
Do you?
Yeah.
Very good. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Sure.
Okay. And again, if you could just state your names for the record. Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you. My name is Christy White. I'm an attorney with Radler White Parks and Alexander, and am here representing the applicant and was involved in the discussions with the neighborhood. I put together some thoughts just in the event that we had this testimony. A few things. Back to the legal standard that we'll be judged by in this case, and it's whether removal of the previous conditions on balance is equally or more supportive of the comprehensive plan as a whole than leaving the conditions in place. And it seems to be no disagreement on what that legal standard is. And just a reminder that the staff and the hearings officers identified actually 199 policies and found that this proposal met 198 of them. So even if you took the one policy that seems to be the center of attention on access to food, it's one of the 199. And even if you gave it significant weight, it wouldn't change the balance. But despite that, last time we were here, you asked us what we could do to move the needle. And we suggested at the hearing that we thought we could take the risk and agree to 1,500 square feet of retail. But you said, there's the beginnings of a conversation here. What more can you do? So we took you seriously, and we went out and gathered some experts in the field to earnestly ask them, how much more can we do here without making this site non-viable for both the neighborhood and the applicant? That research is in your packet. It was done by Johnson Economics and then three mixed-use developers with experience in Portland. And they told us that we could potentially get to 3,000 square feet of retail. That was based on a site-specific evaluation to answer your question as to what use and what size would be viable on the site. We went back and watched the videos and were presented with a piece of paper when we started mediation, and the two questions were, what kind of commercial and how much? The collective conclusion was 3,000 square feet. Now, we still understand from that data that that's a stretch, but we're willing to do it. And it's not that we're just willing to tell you that 3,000 square feet is a condition we can live with. We're actually willing to build it, to take on the extra costs of putting retail on the ground floor, building that retail with the hope that the design of that and the build of that will encourage retailers to come to the property. Swirl countered with two conditions, one that there must be 7,500 square feet of retail, and a second that mandates that 5,000 of that is a neighborhood market with an emphasis on healthy and fresh foods. That food market condition, unfortunately for us, is an impossible condition that sets the site up for failure in the exact same way that the existing conditions have set the site up for failure. Of course, it's vague and creates a significant enforcement issue, and we don't believe it's the job of the council to handpick a particular use and require that that particular use be built on the property. There's, of course, a third party in that equation, and that is a retailer. And we don't have that retailer, and we don't have that tenant after 2.5 years. More importantly, there was no evidence presented that 5,000 square foot market or 7,500 square foot of retail would be viable. Instead, the proof was a list of grocers who have similar footprints, we'll agree to that, in other locations in the city, and a quote that the Strohecker site owner will need to find someone looking to open a one-off store. We've been looking for that person for 2.5 years, and we haven't found them. That acknowledges that there's not a current food market tenant available. This is really important. A market is not viable. Too much retail is not viable. There's no market study or demographic data that would suggest that the swirl condition would be viable. So what are you left with? You're left with a battle of opinions. And those opinions have really different win and loss scenarios. If our condition is imposed, there will be a minimum of 3,000 square feet of retail space. And under our proposed condition, we may get more. If Swirl is right, and we have 3,000 square feet, and that attracts more retail, there's nothing about our condition that wouldn't allow us to attract that more retail. Everybody wins. However, if their condition is imposed, and our experts are right, at best we'll have a high risk of dark storefronts and potentially too prescriptive of a condition to develop the site at all. So finally, this is not a type of decision where a number between two final offers can be selected arbitrarily and hope it works out. It's got to be selected based on site-specific data and the viability of the site. I'm just going to jump really quick to design review. In terms of the requested design review condition, first, that wasn't part of the scope of our mediation. We were sent away with really clear directions, type of use, and quantity of that use. Under PCC 33-420-021, the application of a design overlay must also include the adoption of design guidelines. Under PCC 33855, to place a new design overlay on the site, you have a different application, different standards, and different notice. So I think we're too late in the process for the design overlay. But I'll end with this. You just adopted 30 pages of design and development standards for the CM1 zone. And the purpose statement that's written into the code basically speaks to this site, a dispersed mixed-use commercial site surrounded by low-density residential. And when you have that anywhere in the city, you comply with this. These design standards are pedestrian standards, height limits, setbacks, building length and articulation. They speak to all of the criteria that we have heard is a concern about the design of this particular site. If we don't have faith in the design standards we just adopted, and if we don't think they work here, then why would they work anywhere in the city? We're asking you to have faith in what you just adopted. We'll comply with these. We'll be sure that there's a development here that is in compliance with all of these design standards and that at least establishes viability. And if we're wrong and the site can handle more, then everybody wins. Thank you.
Very good. And for those of you watching the clock, we'll make sure that the neighborhood representatives have exactly the same amount of time, 6 minutes and 6 seconds. Commissioner Fritz.
Just a question. You referenced the Johnson Economics. I don't have that. Is that in the...
It was in the packet that was submitted. There's two letters. One letter is the initial letter from Johnson Economics, and the second letter is the supplemental. There should be three to four or five page memos.
Weird, there's no cover letter.
And then there's three letters that follow those from three Portland mixed-use developers who we also asked to study.
Could I ask you a couple of follow-up questions, please? So just to make sure I understand what's being proposed, we're still talking about the CM1 designation. The trip cap is still in place.
Yes.
The trip cap would require... It has a neighborhood contact requirement associated with it. That would remain in place.
Yes.
And you are proposing as a new condition 3,000 square feet of retail. And here's a question I have. My understanding was that had a time limit on it. Am I correct or incorrect?
So this is what we suggested in our condition, that we're actually going to make the investment and build the retail. So we will, from 6 months of the point of core and shell, so it's already constructed, the money's already invested in the site, we can encourage retailers based on the design of the site and the excitement of the site. If 6 months after that's complete, we still have absolutely no retail interest in the site, we'd like the opportunity to not have that space be dark, but actually to convert it to whatever other allowed use there is. So an example would be it could turn into ground floor residential, or it could turn into a neighborhood kind of serving office use, or anything that was allowed in the CM1 zone, not anything that would be prohibited.
Okay,
we just don't want it to be dark.
How do you define then interest? What constitutes interest?
So it wouldn't just be an interest. What we would do is actually invest and build. So when you build ground floor retail with residential over, the construction costs are a lot greater. So one, we're trying to communicate we're very serious and committed to taking this risk. If after 6 months we have marketed the site like crazy and we have no interest at regular market conditions, then we have to be able to come back to you and say, here's what we did, and we have nobody. So now our choice is it's dark, or we go with another permitted use in the zone for that ground floor.
Okay, and one more follow-up, and I'm sorry, maybe this is self-evident, but I'm not in the commercial leasing business. And I have no reason to doubt your veracity whatsoever. I want to be crystal clear about that. But what would prevent you from creating this space and then asking a rate that is way above what the market would bear?
That's just insane. That's why, because the cost of construction, this is not insignificant commitment. Okay. The cost of construction to build retail in this space without having identified a retail tenant, and with the Johnson Economic Studies making us quite worried about that, nobody in their right mind would do that. So I think what's more likely to happen is that as we're designing and building this, we are out there trying to mitigate our risk by finding anybody who would fit our condition. And then what happens, honestly, is if you can't find anybody, you start compromising and bargaining on maybe lower rents or whatever else it is to get the person in there, because that's a much more sane approach than leaving it dark and hoping that you convert what was a much higher ceiling, ground floor to ceiling height, to another use where you're kind of wasting that space that you already invested in.
I see. Okay, thank you.
So you could build to suit. So you mentioned in the study that Vista's Vista Cafe.
Vista Cafe.
A little bit less than, so that you'd obviously need to build a kitchen and set it up like that. So would this 6 months be before the building even opens, or
no?
When does
start
on the 6 months?
Right, we're saying as soon as this condition is adopted, we're hitting the ground running and talking to everybody we can talk to, because of course that mitigates our risk. And then after we've actually made the investment and the space is actually at core and shell, then the timeline starts ticking. So we're trying to provide the longest timeline and the biggest investment so that people have certainty that we're serious about the condition.
Yeah, I think that needs to be specified if this is the way we go. When does that 6 months start? Because otherwise you would have time to change it and not build it that way.
Well, and what we said it was, and we're open to that, but what we said is substantial completion of core and shell, because at that point, and maybe this is a way better question for maybe a planner in the room, but at that point, you're absolutely committed to having built the retail space. It's there. People can see it. People can feel it. And it's still amenable to a specific user who could come in and make different TI, tenant improvement choices based on the particular use.
Thank you.
Well, I had a question, but and maybe this might be a BDS question, but what does it mean exactly to build to retail? Higher ceilings?
So generally higher ceilings. There's different building code requirements depending on the construction type. So it might be wood over steel, and so you're putting steel or concrete in at the ground floor. And usually it's anywhere from, I know it's 18-foot floor to floor in some situations, but it's usually retail requires a higher floor-to-floor ratio than regular residential. So there are distinctions under the building code for the occupancy classification. There's distinctions for the type of construction, and then the distinctions for separation of residential and retail use, which create cost issues when you're building.
Yeah. Very good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hi, I'm John Newman. I'm the co-president of Swirl. And if I might, could I invite up Ms. Richter, who's an attorney for a local resident and who has been helping us out with this?
It's your 6 minutes and 6 seconds to use however you'd like.
Okay, I'll do a brief introduction and then hand it over to her. So I want to thank you for the opportunity. This is obviously a big responsibility for the neighborhood, and I'm really proud of the neighborhood coming together in a single voice. And putting together what we feel are a very reasonable set of conditions for the property. We believe our proposal addresses concerns that the landowner has about creating a viable, about viability, while also creating this small commercial node that meets the needs of the neighborhood and reflects the history of the property. We did have a very productive negotiation, and I want to thank Commissioner Fish for proposing that, because it was good to come together. Ultimately, we could not come to agreement. There are issues that are very important to the neighborhood, having access to fresh food, and also the design review having a voice going forward. Just to touch on a few things, we believe that the economic report actually shows an opportunity within a one-mile range of the site, that there is a significant opportunity there. We also feel that in the application's proposal, the statements from the developer make it clear that there's no interest in creating a retail space. So we share your goal of a 20-minute neighborhood. We share the goal in the comprehensive plan of having access to fresh food. And it's clear from this application that that's not going to happen unless some small conditions are put on the property. And with that, I would like to hand it over to Carrie.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Carrie Richter. I'm an attorney at Bateman Seidel, and I represent Blythe Olson. I was also a participant in the negotiations. The negotiations included a couple-hour meeting, sit-down at BDS offices, and then a follow-up conference call. I think everybody is working hard to identify the right use for this site. I think it's unfortunate that the applicant was unwilling to come forward with an actual proposal, because if they had done that, we would have had a design and we would have had a use and we could have evaluated it against the criteria at that point, just like Strohuckers did when it was originally cited. When the zone was changed to a commercial use. We are at a disadvantage, all of us, because we don't have a use to evaluate. And so a lot of this, I think I agree with Ms. White that all of this is the best we can do, not knowing much, and we do have to rely on experts. From our analysis, from our sit-downs, we too provided experts that talked about the need for a critical mass of retail and that the success of this site is going to depend on having enough there. And I appreciate Ms. White's point that if our experts are wrong, if her experts are right, there will be a lot of retail because the applicant will do more than is required. But if their experts are right, the site sits vacant. And I strongly disagree with that idea. First of all, the site won't sit vacant because they will come back and seek to rezone the site again. And that is what they have done here. And they will do it again in the event that this effort proves in the event that they cannot site 7,500 square feet. We are giving up conditions that severely restrict the property, and they haven't even tried to market it without those conditions or with a more limited and reasonable set of conditions that we talked about in our testimony, how our proposal for 7,500 square foot of retail represents 10% of the FAR that could be built on the site. That gives the developer a whole bunch of opportunity. It's 25% of what the conditions require now in terms of the square footage that Strohuckers had before. So that is significant. And we've provided testimony about the ability to make a market. This site has served as a successful grocery store for 100 years, and it has proven difficult for 2.5. So that would suggest provide substantial evidence to suggest that a market and a retail can work here. I'll reiterate what Mr. Newman said, that it is true that we know of no zones that have specific use restrictions on them, but there are almost no plan policies that are as specific as access to healthy food and the 20-minute neighborhood concept. And so in that respect, there would be a basis to find that those comprehensive plan policies dictated a different result for this site. Finally, I want to quickly talk about design review, and I want to point out two reasons why the existing CM1 design review standards are inappropriate for this site. First of all, the current standards do not take into account the proximity of the park, and we've provided evidence of situations where property is adjacent to public resources like parks, like the Jewish community centers, where design overlay is imposed in order to get at the synergy between these public resources. The second and as important a reason why the commission ought to take up this design review issue is because the general CM1 standards, the 30 pages that the city just adopted, do not provide for any public hearing or review. They do not provide for notice. They do not provide an opportunity for the neighborhood to come in and talk to staff about their concerns about the design. 11 of the 25 conditions that are on the property now relate to design, and some of them deal with the park. And the only way that we'll get a chance to look at those issues is if we are given an opportunity to have a what's called a type 2 review at the design phase, and that's why design review is critical.
Thank you. Commissioner Fish has a question, then I'm going to give the applicant an additional 34 seconds because we have to give everybody equal time on,
okay.
on this. This is a legal hearing, so we have to do that.
Well, you
Commissioner
some
Fish.
Questions.
So in your exchange with the mayor, I want to make sure, Ms. White, that I didn't miss something. Under your proposal, from the point at which the 6 month is triggered, and Commissioner Fritz has raised a concern about being clear about when does that 6 month
sure.
run. But from the point at which that 6 month period or whatever we agree upon, if at all, is triggered, if you are unsuccessful, would that have to come back to planning?
I think it would at least have to come back to the Bureau of Development Services for us to demonstrate that we weren't successful and are allowed to develop the ground floor with a CM1 allowed
use. And could that be appealed to this body?
Probably decisions like that are not normally appealed to this body.
But it would come back to the Bureau of Development Services.
Yeah, right, yes.
You'd have to make some kind of showing before you convert the space to some other use.
Yes, because we would come in with for an example, the way the mechanics would work is we'd come in for a, hopefully we won't do this, but we would come in with a tenant improvement permit for something that wasn't retail. The BDS would read the condition of approval, and it would say, hey, this has to be retail, unless we demonstrated that in this six-month period, which actually is a much longer period because it's all through core and shell, we weren't able to identify any market-reasonable retail developer.
And just, could you help me understand, if that contingency occurred, what role would the neighborhood have in evaluating whether they think you had met your burden?
So I agree with Carrie that I don't think there's any formal notice requirement if we were to come in and say.
But we could add that as a condition of approval.
You could add a condition of approval that we notified the neighborhood. We had notice requirement to the neighborhood that we were.
Trigger this contingency.
Yes, exactly. We could do that.
Thank you.
Commissioner Fritz.
Would you be willing to add a condition of approval that you would meet with the Neighborhood Association and Ms. Richter's client
of
during
course.
The design phase
of course.
To get their input? Part of what I heard was the concern about having the input.
Absolutely. That's most people do that, and some people do it better than others.
I agree with both of those statements. So
yes.
I think I can put a condition of approval saying you have to do it, and you have to do it well.
yes.
I'm glad to know that you did talk with each other. There's some movement, I believe, even since
yes.
last time.
Yes.
Thank you.
If you want, you can take 34 more seconds. I don't know. Was it 34, Carla?
You're looking at me. So
yes, 34.
34, thank you.
Only 34. No, it takes more.
I would just mention the two design review examples provided are design review for sites that are in a design overlay or sites that are in a plan district and are surrounded by other properties that are in design overlays. This is a very isolated property, and if you read the purpose statement, those design standards that are already in the code are specifically tailored for this kind of property exactly.
Great.
I'm going to stop.
Perfect.
10 seconds under.
Thank you.
And while you're all here, if we do move forward with a condition about meeting during the design phase, I would like you all to please consider having connection from the property to the park. We're not going to, it's not recommended to put in a condition of approval on that. Obviously, again, that would seem like to be an amenity that the occupants would want.
I think that's a natural discussion during the design development phase.
Yeah. The existing easement, or not easement, the property, the access to the park could easily be obscured by the building and make it seem like a private park. So I want to be clear on that.
Can I just respond to your comment about that, about the type 2 notice really quickly, about the meeting? There could be a meeting in advance, but unless you require opportunity for notice and an opportunity for a hearing, there's nothing more than a meeting that would occur. So the neighbors wouldn't have an opportunity under Commissioner Fish's example other than just to have a meeting, and there would need to be a type 2 review.
Can I just say this, and I think then we're finished with this colloquy. If you got notice under this approach, and you determined, you believe, and the community believes that this has been undertaken in bad faith, you still have recourse to come to the council and express that concern. And the council has other authority in the oversight of a development project where it can make its displeasure known. Let me just leave it at that.
So could I ask a question of legal counsel? Thank you very much. You can
thank
go
you.
Ahead back to your seats. I want to make sure that I'm following exactly the right process. I know Commissioner Saltzman is prepared to make a motion. What if there are multiple motions?
Procedurally, once you have one motion on the table, unless it's a friendly amendment that somebody's making, you need to dispose of that motion first, and then you can move to another motion.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Commissioner
Before
Saltzman.
Anybody yep. makes oh, a motion, sorry. Could I please have staff come back?
Yeah,
I'd like to hear from staff.
Questions.
Yeah, very good.
Are we not discussing this before there's a motion?
Well, I mean, any commissioner can make time. Any commissioner can make a motion anytime
okay.
they'd like.
I would like to move that we approve the neighborhood's proposal in part, and that would be a minimum of 7,500 square feet of retail sales and service areas, a minimum 5,000 square feet of that dedicated to a neighborhood market, with one or more tenants offering healthy, fresh foods. I do not support the design review, type 2 design review. And I believe I'm making that motion because I am swayed by the fact that our comprehensive plan does speak to 20-minute neighborhoods and access to food. And I think there's been good arguments in support of that put forward. This is the site for many people in that neighborhood to have that 20-minute access and access to local food. And I believe in the market of niche food markets that we are seeing today, where you have you have Green Zebra, you have a lot of others. There's one just opened on 50th and Sandy that I was at last week. I think it's called I forgot the name of it. But they're cropping up left and right, and I believe this has got to be an attractive location, despite the fact that it has sat dark for the last 2.5 years or whatever. I was duly skeptical at the original hearing about whether anybody can make it work, but I do believe there's a lot of willing customers that live in this neighborhood would want to bend over backwards to see that one of these local vendors is successful, and I believe this is the way to go. So that's my motion.
We have a motion. Is there a second? There's no second. Commissioner Udaly, you wanted to bring staff back up. Is that correct?
Commissioner Fritz wanted to, and I believe
I'm
I
sorry.
Will have some questions for staff as well, but
very
I'd
good.
Like her to begin.
I would like to know your opinion of what you've heard so far and what the best options might be.
This is Mark Moffitt, Bureau of Development Services. I'm reluctant to offer a personal or even professional opinion here. I think the neighbors and the applicant would speak better to those. I would just mention with regards to the evidence in the applicant's case with the 6 months thing, there's no real good tool when you're building a shell space. I don't even think you get a temporary certificate of occupancy from the city until later. So my idea, and I just sort of a nod from my supervisor, is that we would have photographic evidence required that the shell is complete. In other words, the floor is there, the walls are there, the ceiling is there, the services are plumbed, and then written evidence of marketing starting that day with some interval of evidence until the 6 month period. And then they've shown us that it was built on day X, and then for the following 6 months they marketed in some way. And then, you know, just basically would be an administrative review of that. They would show it at the counter to the permit center and we'd say, yeah, it was done on this day and they tried to market it for 6 months, so now it can be something else.
But development services that wouldn't have a trigger to know when that photographic evidence starts. You wouldn't. There isn't a process to turn in that photograph, is there?
Just at the moment, as Christy White mentioned, if they came in for a permit for a tenant improvement to do something else, we would insist on that evidence and probably scan and attach it to that building permit.
So technically you could do it, in other words?
Yeah.
That was my concern instead.
It would have to be a photo, and you know, the neighbors would be able to see when the space was constructed. So I would assume that would all be on the up and up, you know, like a date stamped photo.
So if we go this route, if you could help us with what that language should say, that would be helpful to me.
I guess I would suggest that the applicant's language works, and that's just those, what I just mentioned, would be the logistics of how we worked it out during permitting. You could try to do language. I think that'd be kind of clunky. It'd be hard to get all that in there. If you want it in there, by all means.
So I think that my questions would be more appropriate for BPS, but there may be some overlapping here. Do we have staff from BPS in the room?
So.
Okay, well, maybe. So. All right. So I understand that with CM1, there's extra FAR for affordable housing, but no bonus height. And the possibility was raised at the last hearing as to whether or not this development could have an additional height allowance, which would let them have ground floor commercial and two stories of residential. That's just not an option for whatever reason.
It's 35 feet, and that's it.
But we're talking about putting all sorts of conditions and requirements on this, so why wouldn't we be able to allow something when we're restricting other things?
You mean like taller height?
Yeah.
You'd have to do a condition, you know, extra height is allowed, or, you know, instruct us to do that via a condition of approval.
Okay.
I'm looking at Lindley now.
I'm not certain that without modification review or an adjustment. I haven't really thought through it, but I think we probably need another land use review that wasn't noticed.
Okay.
They, for that matter, they could do a land use review regardless of what happens here. They could come in and ask for adjustments to standards when they come in to develop it, and that would go to the neighborhood and have notice and appeal opportunities.
Yeah. These hearings are few and far between, and sometimes we're learning as we go along and remembering a conversation about an amendment I brought. It was not an appeal, where the neighborhood was not accepting a zoning change because they didn't want commercial, but that developer needed the commercial zoning in order to get the height for the housing. So it was kind of the reverse. So I was just wondering if there was any way that we could give them more height for residential, allowing them to commit more ground floor to retail. And it sounds like no.
I think Mark is correct that if they wanted the additional height, it would come through a later application.
And my other question is pretty general, and it might be for the city attorney. I'm just not clear on what kind of conditions or requirements council can place on this property. Like, there are a lot of really important, valid desires in the neighborhood, but I don't know that we can dictate what this property owner does with their property despite all the evidence that the market just may not support significant commercial property or a full-service grocery store.
So conditions must be based on findings that particular comp plan policy, in this case, for these criteria, you're trying to determine whether a condition is necessary to make the finding that on balance the comprehensive plan policies are satisfied. Or there's, you know, service criteria, and so you have the trip cap to make sure that the transportation service criteria are met. In looking at the criteria, you have a broad range of conditions you can apply. There are, however, other limitations you also have to think about, such as constitutional limitations. For example, you couldn't say, and we'd like you to make this a public park, because that's a taking, right? We'd have to buy the property in order to make it a public park. We can't do that kind of condition. So some of what you're doing is considering our policies and then also considering the backdrop of what limitations there are on government in acting against private property.
You've hit on you've hit on the topic that I am struggling with, which is taking. This property owner bought this property with existing restrictions, full knowledge of the restrictions and conditions. So I don't think if we impose the very same restrictions that it could be seen as a taking. But, I'm just...
Commissioner, can I just offer an observation?
Sure.
Which is one of the reasons that I think these are among the most interesting things that we take up as a council is that uniquely we get to balance competing values that are written in a very general term. And we can have sharp disagreements among the five of us about the relative weight to give to various things. So, you know, for example, as I've listened to the testimony, I'm likely to be persuaded by the applicant's proposal at a minimum of 3,000 feet. But I think the community has made an argument, a valid argument, that the 6 months may not be long enough to market. And we can't, I don't want to be in a situation where we're setting a condition that's going to fail because there's a downturn in the economy or because there isn't adequate time. I might be inclined to bump that up to a year. I think there'll be pressure from the developer, from the residents, from people in the neighborhood to fill that space. And I think an extra 6 months would focus the attention on getting the job done, which we want. So, but uniquely, and I've learned this from Commissioner Fritz, because she often, you noticed the other day when we had the noise hearing, the first thing she did is she asked the noise officer, what are the conditions of approval? What's the code? What are the ground rules that we get to play with? And then how do we balance what we balance them against what? And then we often disagree fundamentally, even though we're all playing within the same sandbox. So I would just say that this is uniquely an area where you get to follow what your head and your heart guide you, and you get to balance.
My final question is, I know that we put all sorts of requirements or conditions on land use, but how common is it for us to say you can only have one type of retail enterprise?
It's not. I'll tell you that right
okay.
now. But it's also very uncommon to do a zone change and have 26 different conditions of approval. This was a deal that was made way back when.
Yeah.
And at the time, those were the side. They were actually intended to be sideboards, not demands. Don't do anything other than this.
Yeah.
But this is a very unusual situation that have coming back for conditions to be taken off. Because
yeah.
usually we just make the change. I mean, we had that discussion, as you remember, over Lansou and various other places in the comprehensive plan. You putting an asterisk on a zoning map really doesn't work very well, and that's essentially what we're dealing with here.
Yeah. Well, thank you, everyone, for bearing with me. I'm recognizing very valid concerns on both sides, and I want to make sure that I've got a full grasp of what we, the parameters that we can work within. Thank you.
I think Commissioner Fish is ready to make a motion. I would just say
well,
that
since I've previewed a little bit, and you're much better at making it, would you mind making it? this is for purposes of having a test, the test vote and a conversation.
Yeah, well, here's where I'm at. I really wanted to go with the neighborhood because I have been to that Strohackers. I think it has been a really valuable place for the neighborhood for many years. I'm persuaded by the evidence in the record that it just doesn't seem like that's going to continue to be that use. And I really think that we should have some commercial in this space. And so that's what I'm interested in. I was actually dismayed to find out, as a course of this proceeding, that none of our commercial zones require commercial. And that, mea culpa, I did not notice that as we were moving through it. I think we might want to revisit that because there's certainly some places that we really, really want commercial. This is one of them. And so because we're trading 26 different conditions for one condition, I think that I was just looking at my phone for the various places that I know of, the size of the Barber Foods in my neighborhood, which is 12,000 square feet. That's a very small grocery store, but it has a niche market. The pub in my neighborhood is less than 2,000 square foot, and the deli market is, again, about 3,000. So I think 3,000 could be a place which would have some retail, some potentially a cafe or something like that, and potentially sell some fresh food, particularly if they can make it work. And so I'm interested, Commissioner, in your concept of extending it to a year.
Well, I would take the applicant's proposal, but extend the marketing requirement from 6 months to 1 year.
Yeah. So then I move that we take the applicant's proposal, changing the timeline to 12 months. No design review, but a condition of approval that the neighborhood is consulted during the design phase, with notice to nearby neighbors as well as the neighborhood association and anybody who is on the record of interest for this proceeding, to let them know of the meeting so that there can be some neighborhood input.
I'll second that.
We have a motion from Commissioner Fritz. We have a second from Commissioner Fish. Any further discussion?
So we'd be taking a tentative vote.
This is a tentative vote. Call the roll.
Saltzman.
Well, I believe that the motion in front of us, as the represented by the applicant's proposal, is really going to result in a very tortured course that this issue is going to come back to this council, because we're going to be asked to debate. Yeah, it's really going to be a shell game. We're going to be asked to debate when the shell was built, whether it's a shell, how long it was marketed, and all these little micro issues are going to make their way back to us, and we'll be sitting here in the same place we are right now. So I believe the neighborhood has made a case that access to healthy food and 20-minute neighborhoods is strong. I think this site is perfect. I think it can work. And everybody can live with it and move on and make their plans accordingly. So I respectfully vote no.
Hugh Daly.
Well, I want to thank everyone who participated and came last month to give testimony. This was a fascinating hearing to view and to think about. Portland Heights is a really unique neighborhood in our city, unique demographics, unique terrain, probably the most affluent food desert in the entire city, I'm going to take a wild guess at. And I really appreciate how important some kind of commercial space is in the neighborhood, and especially grocery. My hope is that while it doesn't seem likely that you're going to get a full-service grocery store in a neighborhood with such low density and with so many options within 2 miles of the site, that you do get fresh food access. So I vote aye.
Fritz.
Yeah, as I said, I really wanted to go with the neighborhood's proposal, but the evidence in the record just wasn't persuasive. There was the compelling testimony of the consultant for the neighbors, and that, again, I tried to get to yes on that, but I just unfortunately couldn't. And I think then if it can't be a grocery store, the neighborhood gathering space, as Commissioner Daly alluded to, this is a neighborhood where most people are able to get to other places that are relatively close by. And I think for me that the neighborhood gathering space is also important. So I appreciate the applicant offering to put their best efforts into this. And I think this is probably not satisfactory to anybody, but it may be the best compromise that certainly I can think of. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Wheeler.
So this has been an extraordinarily complex issue. And I have done everything in my power to make sure that I'm sticking to the record and that I'm focusing on the facts and leaving to the side emotion. But I would be remiss if I did not say there's a certain degree of emotion that I have wrapped up in this particular issue. I grew up in this neighborhood. I spent a lot of years going to and from Strohecker's. I went to school with members of the Strohecker's family, and I found them to really be extraordinary people and community-minded individuals. And there's a piece of me that mourns the loss of Strohecker's and what it meant not only to the neighborhood but to the community at large. That being said, looking at the record, I have a concern. And Commissioner Hugh Daly actually went right to it with the question of taking. And that is, if we prescribe that this location is unique to any other location in the city of Portland, and it must have a certain amount of retail, and that amount, you know, some percentage of that amount of retail must also be for the explicit use of the sale of a certain category of products, my concern would be what happens then if they are unable to market under those very restrictive conditions. And I believe personally, based on the facts that I've gleaned from the record, that would also constitute a taking. And that would also put us back in the position of trying to find the right answer, as Commissioner Saltzman said, under a different scenario. So I am persuaded, as Commissioner Fritz was, that the offer that was put on the table by the applicant is a good midway point. It's not what the neighborhood wants, and I want to acknowledge that. But I think it's a good step forward. I think it has a lot of potential. It could be something very, very positive for the community to have that gathering space again, separate from the record, but maybe related to that use of community gathering is the location. It's right in the middle of a neighborhood. It's next to a public park. There's a lot of great opportunity there. So with the conditions that Commissioner Fritz put on the table about community engagement in the design process and notification, with the extension that Commissioner Fish had proposed to a year, while I know that will create undoubtedly some issues and trials for the applicant, I think it's a reasonable compromise along with the rest of the package. Let's see what we can do here as a community, and let's make this special. I vote aye. The motion has carried. The application is approved with conditions. The matter will return to the council for the adoption of findings.
Any Carla, do we? I think 10-10 would be 3 weeks. Do we have a time certain on the 10th? Yes, please.
And could I get the time certain, please, and the date?
Yeah, looking at the second week in October would be October 10th at 10:40 a.m.
Good. And so the final vote will be October 10th at 10:40 a.m., time certain here in City Hall Council Chambers. Is that good? Very good. This issue is disposed. And we are adjourned.
Don't we have one more thing?
I think we should vote on that next time.
Okay. Don't scare me like that, Chloe.
What?